Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight we're going to talk about a man who's been called R. Martin Luther King Jr., about him and a few others who were pivotal for various reasons in the history of LGBT rights and politics in San Francisco and California and beyond. He was the first openly gay person voted into office in a major U.S. city, and just a year later, in 1978, was gunned down along with San Francisco's mayor at the time, George Moscone. That's right, I'm referring to Harvey Milk. I'm joined by two experts on Milk, Moscone, and their killer, and we hope you'll join us, too, by phoning in a bit later with your memories of those turbulent and exciting times, or if you weren't around here then or weren't born yet, with your questions. Before I introduce my expert guests, though, here's the late Trevor Haley, founder of the Cruising the Castro Historical Tours, telling her out-of-town visitors a little bit about the Milk Moscone killings and then explaining why she ended her tours at the site of Milk's former camera store on Castro Street. Trevor's been leading people on the Cruising the Castro walking tour since 1989. I caught up with her on a recent tour at the site where Harvey Milk's camera store stood. She was explaining how former supervisor Dan White had taken former supervisor Milk's life and the life of Mayor George Moscone in City Hall.
Both of these men, he shot him in the chest. Now, this was 1978, November of 78. He shot him in the chest, and when they fell, he pumped bullets into their heads. The last one for Harvey was inches from his head. There were no open caskets for those guys. They were blown to smithereens.
I think it's a very profound place to end the tour. Because I really do think in many ways Harvey Milk is our Martin Luther King, and that he was an individual that could take an oppressed group of people, get that bunch organized, and have them believing in themselves, and that they could have their fair slice of the pie. And he knew in order to really achieve that, we had to get into office for ourselves. But he also knew that if he was successful with this endeavor, he had put his life on the line.
That's the late Trevor Haley, featured on our very first Out in the Bay broadcast 8 years ago. We have some even more juicy tape to come, so stick around. Now my guests, journalist and author Mike Weiss and writer, editor, and publisher Vince Emery. Mike Weiss, a longtime newspaper reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle and other publications, covered the double murder trial of Dan White, Milk's and Moscone's killer, who was elected a San Francisco supervisor the same day Milk was. Weiss also covered the White Night riots sparked by White's manslaughter rather than murder conviction for Time, Rolling Stone, and the Los Angeles Times. The trial didn't sit right with him. He had to know more, spent years researching and writing, and the result is Double Play, The Hidden Passions Behind the Double Assassination of George Moscone and Harvey Milk. The book won an Edgar Award for Best True Crime Book of the Year. It's a gripping account of why Dan White did it and a riveting book, a look, rather, at the modern history of San Francisco politics. Welcome, Mike.
Hello, Eric. Glad to be here.
And Vince Emery, Double Play's publisher, also edited and published this year the Harvey Milk interviews in his own words, which contains 39 revelatory interviews spanning Milk's political career from his first days as candidate to shortly before his assassination. Emery has contributed research and articles for numerous books about San Francisco history and authors, and as publisher of the revised edition of Weiss's book Double Play, added a companion DVD to this new edition that contains TV interviews with George Moscone and Dan White, rare audio of White's chilling confession just hours after the crime, Dianne Feinstein's account of discovering Milk's body, and more. We'll play some of that for you this hour. Welcome, Vince Emery.
Hello, Eric. Good to see you again.
So, Mike, before I forget, and by the way, I have interviewed both of these gentlemen before on this program on Out in the Bay, but not together, so I think this is a double treat.
A double play.
Double play, indeed. Before I forget, Mike, I need to ask you, was Trevor Haley, the tour leader who we just heard, her description, was her description of Milk's killing fairly accurate, Milk and Moscone's killing?
Yes, it was absolutely accurate.
That's good to know, because you sometimes wonder how much of these tour operators kind of like embellish the facts a little bit.
Well, she didn't do that. I mean, you could go into it in much more detail, obviously, but fundamentally what she said was completely accurate.
Great, great, great. So, dear listeners, a little bit later, we'd love to have you join our conversation. I'll give the phone number now. It's 415-841-4134. That's our studio line, not our pledge line. 415-841-4134. So, Vince and Mike, I'm going to throw this first question out to both of you. What compelled you to delve so deeply into Harvey Milk's life? Vince, with your recent collection of Milk's interviews and also earlier republishing Double Play, and Mike, with your exhaustive research about Milk, Moscone, their killer, and the tragedy's aftermath, what is it about Harvey Milk that you find or found so compelling, either of you? Oh, they're pointing at each other.
I think Mike's got the better story here.
I do. I do. to be completely frank, I probably would have written the book even if it wasn't Harvey Milk who was assassinated, but some other supervisor. What interested me was as we talked about this the last time I was here, it was an insurrection. It was the only time that I know of in American history when a sitting city official assassinated two other city officials, a mayor and a supervisor. And the fact that Harvey was gay and the fact that the city was undergoing a kind of integration crisis as more and more gays came here, another point of comparison perhaps with Martin Luther King, just made it a better and more profound and richer story. But what interested me primarily at the beginning was the assassinations and then the trial, because the trial was a travesty.
And we're definitely going to get into that a little bit more later. Vince, what about you? What drew you to, first of all, to work with Mike on this book, republishing it with these companion DVDs or, you know, audio and video clips? And I guess this book first came out in 1984, and it was just re-released, right, 2 years ago.
Right.
And so it had sort of been wallowing for a while, and you thought it was time to bring it back out in the light, or what?
Well, I actually was at the San Francisco Public Library doing research on Harvey for the interviews book when I first found out about Double Play, because Mike donated all his voluminous research papers and audio recordings and all kinds of things to the library, so they have it in the San Francisco the city archives up there, the San Francisco collection. And I had not read Mike's book, hadn't heard of it, and so was looking through all this research material and then sat down and read Mike's book, and I was just blown away by it. And I had a question about some of the interviews that he had, because I was tracking down interviews to collect them for this book of interviews. And called Mike to talk with him about that, and we started to chat, and I found it just astonishing that such an exciting, gripping book. I mean, it reads like a novel, but it's all real. Actually, I think if it was a novel, people would have said some of it was preposterous, but it actually happened, and Mike wrote it so well, I couldn't believe that since it first came out in 1984, it never gone into paperback, it had been out of print. And so then I started talking with him about, hey, how about if we do a new updated, expanded edition?
Actually, Vince asked me on the telephone. He's a complete stranger. It was a cold call.
Cold call.
And he asked me, how would I feel about the book being reissued in a new edition? And since I had been trying for about 15 years to get the book reissued,
I didn't know that till this moment.
Well, unsuccessfully, it took me about a New York minute to say, well, I'd feel fine about that. And then what was even more remarkable is he really meant it, which was extraordinary. And I'd like to say something about Vince as a publisher for all of you writers or would-be writers out there. Vince said to me when we began to work on this book, and he said to me, this is your book. We're going to go through every word of it, and anytime we have a disagreement, you win.
Okay, that's good.
And every publisher says that, every writer. But in my 50 years or so, I'm sad to admit, in the business, Vince is the first publisher who ever truly meant it.
So does that mean you like pored over this thing and did you, was there a rewrite or?
Oh literally.
Yeah. We really rewrote. Vince
every
took every
sentence.
Passive voice in the whole, what is it, 400 pages out of here. We went through it, every sentence.
Oh,
we looked at every single sentence. And because of Vince, it's a stronger book now than it was when I finished it in 1984.
I can't take the credit for that, Mike. It's because of you.
So Vince, what drew you? Why were you researching Harvey Milk to put together this book of interviews?
Well, the San Francisco Public Library has Milk's paper. Milk was a big supporter of the public library. And actually, one of the facts that's newly reported in this book is just a few weeks before he died, he got together a meeting at the public library to start a gay archive, which now they have a gay collection there, which is part of it is his papers. Mm-hmm. So his papers, after Milk died, they went to his lover, Scott Smith. And when he died, his mother then arranged for them to be donated to the library where they are now. And I just thought it was an amazing thing, because outside of the mayor of Castro Street, the Randy Schultz wonderful biography of Milk, which came out in 1982, and Mike's book, Double Play, which came out in 1984, there had been no substantial books written on Milk. So I thought that was an amazing situation. And as someone who admired Milk for what he does and enjoyed him for what a colorful, witty, funny person he is, I thought, well, that's a loss. We need to have something more about Harvey. And as a publisher, I thought, oh, that's an opportunity. Did you know
Harvey Milk personally?
No, Mike met Harvey a couple of times, but
I didn't know him well.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and I didn't know George well, and I didn't know Dan well.
Right, now you know them pretty well.
I actually was living in Los Angeles when Harvey was supervisor and when he was assassinated, so I missed that. But
That's always, I think that's one of those questions. It's sort of like people of a certain age, like, remember where they were when Kennedy was shot in 1963,
right.
And then maybe 5 or 6 years later when Martin Luther King was shot and Robert Kennedy. So, where were you when Harvey and Moscone were killed?
At the time, I was one of two stringers in San Francisco for Time magazine. They had an office down in the Shell building in the financial district. And as happenstance had it, I was teaching a class at Berkeley, where I was an instructor, in the School of Journalism that day, on what it was like to be a freelancer. And the person I had invited in to talk to the class was the other stringer from Time magazine, a woman named Nora Gallagher. And so we were just beginning this class at Evans Hall on the Berkeley campus when a breathless undergraduate came running in from the administrative offices saying, "Nora Gallagher and Mike Weiss, Time magazine wants you back in the city right now." "The mayor's been shot." And we said, "Oh, my God." And we jumped up, and I looked at the class, and I said, "The freelance life." And we went out the door.
Yeah.
No, well, for me, I walked past the newspaper rack in L.A., and I saw this headline. I thought, what? Just stop me cold.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like walking into a brick wall. I mean, I hadn't lived in San Francisco during Moscone's time, but I had lived in San Francisco back in 1976, and I just couldn't believe that somebody would do that. And then it got even weirder the more I read about it. I couldn't believe that someone who was a former supervisor had done it, and that it happened in City Hall.
Right.
It just didn't make any sense to me at all.
It was a profoundly disturbing event. I remember things about the city that day that I've never seen before or since. To begin with, it was a deathly quiet fell over the city.
Mm-hmm.
People just stopped talking. You could be walking on Market Street or driving, riding in a streetcar, and there was utter silence. No one knew what to say.
Communal shock.
That evening, when the candle, the first of two candlelight parades began, the second occurring after the verdict, took off. And it's also the only time I can remember seeing a really spontaneous demonstration of tens of thousands of people. People just came out. They wanted to be there. They wanted to be around other San Franciscans to show our grief and our solidarity in the face of this hateful crime.
Mm-hmm. So Milk and Moscone's assassination, besides being obviously a huge personal tragedy for these men's families and friends, had also huge political repercussions. Dianne Feinstein was president of the Board of Supervisors at the time and as such became the mayor upon Moscone's death. She was also the last person besides Milk to see Dan White before he shot Milk, if I'm not mistaken. And here's her account of that from an interview that Double Play author Mike Weiss conducted several years later.
What I heard was after Dan came by my office, I said, Dan, I want to talk to you. And he didn't answer. He went by. I heard the door slam. Mm-hmm. And then I heard no or some exclamation. I don't know. You can be sure it was no. Right. And, you know, I even misjudged the number of shots. And just these things happen.
Everybody does.
I heard the shots, and then I smelled the gunpowder. And it was the gunpowder that really drove through the reality. And then I moved, I went down there, I opened the door, I walked in. No, well, first Dan came whipping by, mm-hmm. and I opened the door, went in and found Harvey.
That's Dianne Feinstein, then president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, recalling the killing of her colleague Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone in 1978. It's included in the DVD that is contained in the book Double Play. So, Mike, your voice is heard on there. When did you conduct this interview with Dianne Feinstein?
Oh, it was probably in 82, 80. Yeah, I would think it was probably 82.
Okay, so it's not that long after, I mean, compared to now, 4 years later. So
yeah,
it's still pretty fresh.
Well,
in
I didn't.
Mind,
I didn't really start. I mean, I had been at the trial, and I had covered the assassinations themselves, but I didn't start working independently on the book until more than 3 years had gone by. In part, because I felt that you could write a better book if you allowed people's feelings to settle a little. I think if I had started trying to do the kind of interviews I wanted to do immediately after the assassinations or after right. the trial, many people who later wanted to talk to me to tell their stories wouldn't have been prepared to at that point.
Right, right. What effects do you think the assassinations of Milk and Moscone had on Dianne Feinstein, both personally and professionally?
Well, may I read something?
Oh, yes, please do.
Because I address that question in the in what we call the final chapter, which is my updated, the book ends with Dan White in prison soon after his trial. And then when we brought out this new edition in 2010, I updated the effects on her. Dianne Feinstein's stout performance in the hours and days after the bloodshed altered her fortunes. She had twice run for mayor and twice lost and was telling friends that she would not seek out office again. But from the moment when she stood at the top of the grand staircase beneath the rotunda, her skirt stained with Harvey Milk's blood and choking back her tears announced that Harvey Milk and George Moscone were dead, she was politically ascendant. Her morality was generally deemed a success. Under her leadership, the city moved away from Moscone's widely inclusive, neighborhood-oriented politics and toward more conservative development policies and a more pro-business stance. A building boom changed the very appearance of the city. Of course, development would have taken place regardless, but the Manhattanization of the skyline, so opposed by the progressives who had Moscone's ear, became the norm. In 1992, she was elected to the U.S. Senate, and ever since has been the most powerful and influential California politician in the country. The experiences of November 27, 1978, changed more than her political fortunes. "I still have a hard time returning to it," she said in 2008. "I live those times, and I've tried to learn from them in terms of what kind of public servant I am and what I believe." A mayor does more than make policy, though. He or she sets a tone. Think Rudy Giuliani in New York or Richard Daley in Chicago. And Dianne Feinstein's was moderate and responsible, precisely the reassurance needed by a city traumatized by the assassinations and the mass suicide of Jim Jones's People's Temple congregants only 10 days earlier. George, of course, had been something else. "He was kind of a happy warrior, a sunny, good old boy," said Steve Scher, Dan White's co-counsel. And Dianne didn't exactly carry on that kind of tradition. In a way, The two very different mayors represented the forces that shaped San Francisco, a small city after all, and made it a place whose writers and artists, capitalists and socialites were welcomed in New York and London. The brief 160-year history of San Francisco is characterized by the pursuit of money, pots and pots of money, and the quest for personal freedom, more freedom to do as you please than most any place else in America. When they meet and battle, where they meet and battle and eventually make their peace, because the city is nothing if not tolerant, is in politics. This is where gay rights and legalized marijuana, beats and hippies and White Panthers clash with the financiers on Montgomery Street, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Catholic Church. The tension between the chase after riches and the freedom of self-expression fuels the lifeblood of San Francisco, gives it vitality and distinctiveness. But to Willie Brown, George's partner in nightlife, who was mayor himself after from 1996 to 2004, Dan White's murderous rage revealed something troubling about San Francisco. When George was assassinated, Brown told me, I instantly viewed the city differently. I no longer see it as a fairy tale city. It really does have a mean, unseemly evil piece in it. I didn't see that before.
That's Mike Weiss reading from his book, Double Play, The Hidden Passions Behind the Double Assassination of George Moscone and Harvey Milk. I'm Eric Jansen. You're listening to Out in the Bay. My other guest is Vince Emery, publisher of that edition of Double Play, and also the editor of the Harvey Milk interviews, in his own words. Let me give you the phone number. We'd love to hear from you, and if you have some reminiscences about those times, the 70s, politics in San Francisco, Harvey Milk, George Moscone, Dan White, Dianne Feinstein, or if you have questions for these two experts about what was going on at that time and how the events then shaped now, give us a call at 415-841-4134. That's our studio line, 415-841-4134. We can either put you on the air, or our producers will jot down your question and run it into me. That phone number again is 415-841-4134. While you're calling, I would like to play part of Dan White's confession to the murders, recorded at the Hall of Justice just hours after the crimes.
I wanted to serve the people of San Francisco well. I did that. Then when the pressures got too great, I decided to leave. After I left, my family and friends offered their support and said, whatever it would take to allow me to go back into office, and they would be willing to make that happen. So since I felt the responsibility of the people who had elected me, I went to Mayor Moscone and told him that I had my situation had changed because of the support of family and friends. I'd like to retain my seat, be appointed to my seat. So, with that in mind, I tried to set my personal affairs in order, preparing to take my seat. And then it came out, and Supervisor Milk, some others, were working against me to get my seat back on the board. I learned of this. I was in the city attorney's office when Supervisor Milk called, stating that he was of that mind. He didn't speak to me, spoke to the city attorney. I was in the office and I heard the conversation, and that he was going to try to prevent me from taking my seat again. The mayor never called me. He told me he was going to call me before he made any decision. He never did that. It was only on my own initiative when I went down today to speak with him. I was troubled. The pressure of my family again, my son's out to a babysitter, my wife's got to work, long hours, 50 and 60 hours, never see my family.
That was Dan White from Dan White's confession to killing fellow supervisor Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone in 1978. It's included on the DVD that comes with Mike Weiss's book, Double Play, The Hidden Passions Behind the Double Assassination of George Moscone and Harvey Milk, published by Vince Emery. They're both my guests tonight here on Out in the Bay. And I want to mention...
It's an interesting thing to listen to that interview. I mean, you heard Dan White getting all teary and choked up at the end. He gets choked up because his kid has to go to a babysitter and his wife has to work. He never, ever in that entire confession ever has any remorse at all about Moscone, never about Moscone's family, never about Milk, never about anybody else. He's only cries. He gets teary at several different points in that, but only when he's thinking about his own problems.
And that's exactly the same thing that you said to me last year, Mike.
Exactly. And that's why I didn't say it this year.
You know,
I think it's good that Vince did.
Vince jumped right in.
And the other thing is, nothing changed for Dan White because when he committed suicide, he left a number of notes. And once again, he did not express any remorse or sorrow or ask for any forgiveness from the families and friends of his victims, nor from the city that he claimed to love but actually defiled.
And you said also that this taped confession actually may have helped the jury acquit him, or not acquit him of murder, at least.
Yes,
because he does sound so. I mean, do you think he's upset there? Do you think that's not genuine, or it's just that he's not upset about the things that you think he ought to be upset about if he's really remorseful?
I think it's completely genuine. I mean, you know, you got to remember that up until the moment Dan White pulled the trigger the first time and shot that first bullet into the body of George Moscone, he had been a policeman, a fireman, a member of the United States Army, a city supervisor, an upstanding, law-abiding, decent man, whether one liked his politics or not. And he had crossed some invisible line. He was in some realm that most of us will never be in our lives. He had just murdered two people, and now he was about to face the consequences, and I think he was in a state of emotional uproar, but very selfish at the same time, thinking mostly about himself.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention, because it's almost the bottom of the hour, 7:30, This Way Out is usually next, but we're taking a full hour tonight, and it's also a good moment to mention that we are in our fall pledge drive here at KLW, and this book, Double Play, and also Vince Emery's book, The Harvey Milk Interviews, in his own words, are both thank you gifts tonight that we're offering during this night and, well, throughout the rest of the drive. But I would say hurry up and get it now. And if you get it tonight, you can get the authors to sign them for you personally if you'd like. So for that, I'm going to give you the toll-free pledge number, which is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. You can also go online to kalw.org. And if you do it that way, just put in the comments section that you would like that you would like them to sign this book. And the thank you gift is for the level of $100 for Double Play, because it includes a DVD, $90 for the Harvey Milk Interviews. And if you want both of them together, $170. So do whatever
way you... bargain.
Yeah, man, what a bargain. So, and you can find out more information about these books, by the way, at emerybooks.com, right?
That's right. Yeah. And, hey, if you do this, more importantly, you're supporting Eric and this program and KALW, which are forces for good in the Bay Area.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that personal endorsement. Let me give the number again, 800-525-9917. That's toll-free, 800-KALW-917. Let us know if you'd like an autographed copy of either of these two books. And again, the website is kalw.org. So I lost my train of thought there a little bit. Well, we did have a call from a listener earlier about having a question. She didn't want to ask the question on the air, but the question was, do you think that the city's political passions have calmed since those tumultuous times? And, for example, we have now Mayor Lee in this battle with Sheriff Ross Mercurimi, which doesn't quite, I mean, it's obviously not the level of murder and assassination, but, you know, generally speaking, how would you say politics have, you know, what's the tone and timbre of politics now compared to then?
That's
and yet on the other hand, we have so much more gun violence in general in the whole country.
Yeah, more gun violence all over the whole country, and I'm not going to try to pretend to be a national political expert. I think there has been a shock effect from that, from Harvey and George's assassination. I don't expect Ross to barge in with a gun to City Hall. I don't think that that's going to happen. That kind of thing is going to happen in our lifetime. And I also think that some of the more blatant injustices that were happening for gay people in San Francisco have been dramatically rectified. I mean, if you read the Harvey Milk interviews, you'll just be amazed at how back in the 1970s and even up into 1978, when we had a gay supervisor, at how intolerant and how discriminating the city police, the city offices, schools were in San Francisco. It's shocking to realize that how big of a change, how much of a shift there has happened in San Francisco. So I think for gay people, it's not going to be as violent. I don't ever expect to see another police riot happen on Castro Street right. The way it did after the White Night riots.
And that's another point, too. Moscone had some brushes with the law earlier, quite some time earlier, and then he went ahead and this is all in the Double Play book and stuff that I didn't know beforehand. He appointed a police chief, which was not supported by the rank and file, let's say, a much more liberal police chief. Is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Charles Game, but can I address the listener's question first?
Sure.
Yeah, I know. I agree with Vince about everything he said. What you have to remember about that time is that it was a time when the city was undergoing a truly profound change. In fact, a change that no city had ever experienced in human history, which was a great number of homosexuals and lesbians were living openly in this city, and that created a kind of integration crisis, because this wasn't just any city. This was a city founded by the Franciscan Fathers, in which the archdiocese was one of the real centers of power. And so you had a politics of great passion in the context of a profound human change taking place. And it seems to me that that's why the assassinations took place. It was because of the depth of feeling that people on both sides of that divide felt. Well, now we're 30 some odd years along and we're all used to it. This is just life in San Francisco and we love it. Mm-hmm. And so I would be very surprised if that kind of passion were to ever erupt again. Although I think the only time something happened that was not even close to it, but at least fainted in that direction, was during the dot-com mm-hmm. boom, when many San Franciscans were deeply resentful of kids 25, 30, 40 years their junior having oodles of money and acting as though they were lords of the city.
Still happens, not quite as much as it did 10 years
but
ago.
Again, but that, too, is something we've kind of become accustomed to. I mean,
right.
That's the answer. Now, I've forgotten what your question was after.
Well, it was about George Gaines and the police chief, but sure. Before we get into that, now, you make me think of this, too. It's like this wasn't really this killing of Moscone and Milk wasn't really, do you consider it an anti-gay crime? I mean, because you talk about it, well, it's so much safer for gay people now than it was then. But, I mean, that was part of what was going on, but that was really not.
Mike is looking up the ultimate answer to that in the book. It wasn't the reason that Dan White shot Harvey wasn't because he was gay, but that was icing on the cake.
And they were actually pretty good friends for a while before
that. They had a very strange complicated, ever-shifting relationship that they got very close at times and politically were opposites.
Yes, I would never call them friends, but there was a certain fascination on Dan White's part with Harvey Milk. And
he's the only supervisor he invited to his son's christening.
To his first son's christening. Let me answer the question by reading from a double play something that Anne Cronenberg said. Anne, for those of you who saw the movie Milk, she's the dyke on a bike in the leather jacket who is working as his campaign manager.
Milk's campaign manager, right.
Harvey's campaign manager. And she went on to become one of the highest-ranking officials in the city health department. And what I say in the book is Anne Cronenberg does not agree with the people who believe Harvey was killed because Dan was homophobic. It's too pat to say Harvey was killed because he was gay, she told me. I think Dan was a very troubled person. He was frustrated. He was betrayed. And the fact that Harvey was gay was just on top of that. And keep in mind, in Dan White's view, it was Harvey Milk and George Moscone who betrayed him. It was a personal crime. And then I go on to say, it's a testament to unintended consequences that although Dan White did not kill Harvey Milk because he was gay, the assassination of a courageous and pioneering leader galvanized the movement and assured Harvey's place in history. Dan White is all but forgotten. George Moscone has his name on a convention center and a playground where he passed part of his youth. But Harvey will live forever.
Moscone and the convention center. Moscone was against redeveloping that entire area, was he not? That was one of the things he championed against. And then, ironically, this convention center is named after him.
Mm-hmm. Vince, you know more about that than I do.
Well, Moscone was against it at first, but after he became mayor, there were enough labor and hotel interests who pushed for it very strongly that he switched and supported it. Harvey hated the idea. Always. He did not want a convention center there. He wanted to have it turned into a working-class neighborhood and rehabilitated that way because it was, frankly, a slum. It had been a working-class neighborhood, went downhill, and the city considered it a big problem. So they solved it by buying things and just demolishing them, and it sat for years as dirt and then became the convention center.
So what do you think, Eric? Do you think it's a good urban space, a good use of that center of the city, that whole area?
Well, you know, since I wasn't here before that was built, or at least not old enough to really know what was going on, I would say, in San Francisco, I don't know what was there before. I know it was kind of considered Skid Row, but then, you know, there were people who, a lot of people actually lived there and called it their home. And you know, they also would like to, the powers that be would like to expand it and make it bigger because we're not, at this point, competing with bigger cities, with bigger convention centers. So I do want to play this one other piece of tape, and this is Harvey himself. And as many times as I've heard this, I still treasure it. And it's the one that he left anticipating his assassination.
This is to be played only in the event of my death by assassination. I fully realize that a person who stands for what I stand for, an activist, gay activist, becomes the target or the potential target for somebody who is insecure, terrified, afraid, or very disturbed themselves. Knowing that I could be assassinated at any moment or any time, I feel it's important that some people know my thoughts. I stood for more than just a candidate. I have never considered myself a candidate. I have always considered myself part of a movement, part of a candidacy. I wish I had time to explain everything I did. Almost everything was done in the eyes of the gay movement.
And that was Harvey Milk. And by the way, that tape that he left to be played anticipating his assassination did not have that background music in it originally. That was added. Vince knows the source of this audio.
It was from the wonderful, wonderful documentary film, The Times of Harvey Milk. It's a deeply moving film. And if you have not, it's actually way better, I think, than the movie Milk, which I loved. And Sean Penn was great. But nobody can be Harvey like Harvey. and The Times of Harvey Milk. It's funny and deeply moving. And this was from that, with the soundtrack music in the background.
So Vince Emery has just in the past, in May, came out with the Harvey Milk interviews in his own words. And you have dug through lots of audio and video to get these various transcripts. I know you want to read one for us, but I want to ask you quickly about another one. You mentioned, and we will read the one you want to read absolutely about Anita Bryant, but in the book, I noticed there's one in there that's a transcript of a debate he's having with John Briggs, who wrote
right.
the initiative outline. Proposition 6 back in 1977? 78.
78.
Yes.
Yeah. When it was on the ballot, right.
And this, you describe this before the transcript itself, this old clunky audio cassette tape that somebody, you know, was recording this thing in the middle of a, you know, the middle of the audience in a high school gym,
right? Walnut Creek High School. So it's echoey. They're in the middle of the audience, so you get all the audience noises.
And he turns the tape over in the middle, and, of course, that's the cassette tapes.
And the... Yeah, you know, it was just bad sound. It was torture for me to transcribe that tape, was still, it's the longest, the most complete recording of any of the Milk-Briggs debate. So I was thrilled
to get
it.
It's amazing that there were no other recordings made. And that's
amazing.
That's incredible, the research you've done of this. So what's this section you're going to read for us?
Well, what I'd like to, one of the things that, we're talking about the Milk-Briggs debate, people, in reviews and people talking about the book, a lot of times have said to me that over and over again, it's the two things are one, it's funny and entertaining, and it's like reading a TV sitcom at some time because the debates are so funny and so involving. But the other thing that amazes them is the same arguments that John Briggs is making and Harvey's arguing against are the same things that people are saying against today. They haven't changed, and Harvey's responses are still very useful. The thing that I want to read is a short bit here from an interview that Harvey did with Tom Hayden, who at the time was Jane Fonda's husband and had an organization called the Campaign for Economic Democracy to influence local California elections. And he was interviewing Harvey in his Castro Street camera store and asked him, in retrospect, how do you... This was just right after the Anita Bryant thing with Dade County, Florida, which had gay rights laws. The voters overwhelmingly voted to repeal them, and a campaign led by Anita Bryant. And so he said, in retrospect, how do you appraise the Anita Bryant crusade now? And Harvey answered him, it's probably the best thing for the gay movement. The day after Miami, I put a sign in my store window that said, don't let it happen here, register to vote. Now, we always had a voter registration drive here. It was slow but steady. And in the 48 hours after Miami, we registered some 700 people right in front of the store. Right after this, a large number of gay people formed a political club, the San Francisco Gay Democratic Club, which is now the most activist club in the city. That now is the club that's known as the Harvey Milk Democratic Club. The weeks before and after Miami, every newspaper in this country had the word homosexual on the front page somewheres or other. More was put in print on homosexuality in that week than in the history of mankind. Every household talked about it. They'd scream at the TV, you blank, blank faggots. But that's the opening of dialogue. Before, they never would have even said that. She, Bryant, did to the gay community what Richard Nixon did to a lot of people. A lot of people realized what's happening. 1977 saw Miami, saw people talking about gay rights, saw a gay person elected in San Francisco, saw the Women's Convention in Houston, which was the convention of conventions so far. And you tell me where the movement from the right is coming from. It's a media hype trying to convince people it's really happening. So Harvey's take on the whole thing was that this victory that Anita Bryant had won in Florida was good because it got people talking about an unmentionable subject. It made it mentionable. And
at least it started the dialogue.
It started a dialogue, which he was right. I mean, you look at that in retrospect, and it's... it's still true today that in a lot of cases now with gay marriage, even people who are upset about it aren't talking about gays. And the subject has entered their consciousness. And as they get to meet gay people and realize that, you know, there's no difference. People love someone. They love someone. That becomes a humanization, which is the next thing that happens after the dialogue start, which Harvey talks about in regard to the successful campaign against the Briggs Initiative, which all of that is still valid today for anybody working on gay rights.
Well, as I've heard some PR people say, the only thing worse than people talking badly about you is people not talking about you at all.
Right.
Spell my name right.
That's right. Just spell my name right. That's Vince Emery reading from his book, The Harvey Milk Interviews, in his own words. Vince, why is it that, you know, this is obviously important to you to have, why is it important to have Harvey's writings, Harvey's speaking in his own words, so that people can see what he said in his own words? And in the case of Double Play, you added the audio and video. So what is it, what's important about people actually seeing this or hearing this or reading it for themselves?
Well, I mean, it's great to like read Randy Schultz's book or read Mike's book and get their impressions and their picture of Harvey. But I didn't see that there was anything showing Harvey's picture of Harvey. And if you read this book, you get as close as you can right now, anyhow, to really seeing how Harvey felt about things. And he was a very smart, very funny, very prescient man. A lot of the things that he saw as being important are still truisms today. A lot of the issues he cared about and a lot of the things that he said would come to pass have come to pass. So there's no other way for people to get exposed to that than by reading the interviews.
Fantastic. Thank you.
He was obviously very farsighted in many regards. I mean, how many people sit down and make a tape saying, I'm going to be assassinated? Martin Luther King didn't.
Great. I have one more question from a caller, and I want to just give the phone number one more time because we have maybe just about 10 minutes left. We might be able to sneak in one more question. The phone number is 415-841-4134 if you'd like to ask a question. Here's a question from Joanne. Do the authors think that Dan White was a forerunner to what became known as the angry white guy, the working class white guy who thought he was being trampled on by all those other groups?
Well, no, he was late to that game. I mean, that was going on. During the Nixon years, the silent American, was that it? Mm-hmm. The silent
that
majority.
Silent majority.
That was Nixon's great appeal, was to what he called the silent majority, the same basic constituency. So, no, I mean, Dan White was part of that. He wasn't a forerunner to it. But the caller is absolutely right in linking the two. I mean, it does seem to be the same phenomenon, only she had the order backwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he seems a pioneer now, too, maybe. But, yeah, he definitely
was. It had
been going on for a while.
I want to play one last piece of tape, and this is not from the book. It's but you know, it's interesting how Double Play had been published in 1984, sat for a while, came back, and it's Jonathan Moscone came out with a play last year. This is
right.
The gay son of George Moscone, Mayor George Moscone, and sort of finally had decided he needed to deal in some public way with his grief and his life after this terrible assassination of his father. And it also points out to, you know, part of the difficulty of having his father sort of overshadowed by Milk's murder kind of got all the attention. So this is a piece where the character in the play, Ghost Light, the character's name is John Moscone, and he's talking about his father's work in the state Senate on behalf of gay rights way back in 1975 before he became mayor.
You know, my father locked the California State Senate in their chambers one time. 1975, the Neanderthal age of the gay rights movement, and he's using the full force of his heterosexual brass balls to pass a bill legalizing sodomy.
Wow.
Huge controversy. So he's the majority leader, right? And he floats the idea that the bill will never pass, you know, like he doesn't have the votes. And then he casually calls for a vote at a really odd time, so they take the vote, and it's a tie. Dead, flat-out tie. So he locks the Senate in the room with a real key, runs and gets a car to rush the lieutenant governor down to the Capitol to cast the deciding vote, and the thing passes. Chaos at the Capitol. Anal sex all over the state.
That was the character John Moscone from the play Ghostlight by Jonathan Moscone, Mayor George Moscone's son. So Moscone has, you know, it seems like he's been overshadowed, but he was back in state Senate days. Can you tell us a little bit about his work on gay rights?
I don't know anything about it.
Okay. this whole incident of being locked up in the...
That really did happen.
I mean, it was very interesting to me to hear it because I probably read this myself at some time because I read everything about Moscone.
Okay.
But I didn't recollect it.
Yeah, okay. Vince has always...
If you want something, you know, obscure and important about anything that happened in relation, is Vince Emery is the person to ask, and his book is the book to buy.
Okay, there you go.
And it does. It actually does have Harvey talking about that incident.
Okay.
To break the tie, the lieutenant governor had to fly in. He was in another state.
Do you think Milk learned a lot from Moscone? Was Moscone one of his mentors as far as politics goes?
Well, they had a strange relationship, too, in that Milk thought, he says in one of the interviews, he thought that Moscone was a great majority leader. He was a great state senator, but not so good as a mayor. It's a slightly different skill set. And Milk campaigned actively for Moscone, and when Moscone got elected, Moscone appointed Milk to on the Board of Permit Appeals, which is the first time an openly gay person in the whole country had ever gotten named to a city board. But they also quarreled about things a lot. So it was like with a lot of people with Harvey, it was a contentious relationship.
Harvey was not the easiest person in the world to get along with.
So since you're both talking about buying each other's books, I just do want to mention it one more time that this is KALW's fall fundraising drive, and both of these books are available as thank you gifts if you want to support Out in the Bay and support KALW, this fantastic community asset that we have here. The books are The Harvey Milk Interviews in His Own Words, compiled and edited by Vince Emery. And that's available for a $90 pledge. Vince Emery is also the publisher of the newer edition of Mike Weiss's book, Double Play. Read the subtitle there for me, will you? It's so long. Oh, you don't have your glasses on. Mike Weiss's Double Play, The Hidden Passions Behind the Double Assassination of George Moscone and Harvey Milk. Aren't those difficult sometimes? The subtitles get long. Anyway.
Well, Vince explained this to me because I said to him, why do we have to have a subtitle? And he explained to me it's like everything else in contemporary life. It's all due to Google.
Yeah, there you go. All the keywords. The keywords, the hidden passions behind the double assassination of George Moscone.
There was a time pre-internet where nonfiction books got published without subtitles. Now I don't think you can publish one without a subtitle.
Well, there you go. Anyway, that book is available for a donation of $100. You can become a basic member of KALW for $50. If you want both of those books together, bargain price of $170 for the two of them. And if you let us know, like in the next 5 minutes before we go off the air, that you would like them autographed by either of these gentlemen, they will be happy to do so. So the phone number to call is 800-525-9917. That's toll-free, 800-525-9917. Or you can also do it online at kalw.org. Although if you want the signature, probably better to phone. Want to ask you both, listener Jeff wanted to know, where do you folks think that Harvey would be today? What do you think he'd be doing today? That's so hard to speculate.
We both get asked that question quite a bit.
The Proposition 8, the gay rights proposition, that anti-gay marriage proposition that passed
Proposition 8
ago,
a while ago, yeah.
It would not have passed.
And what about the Knight Initiative several years ago? That was, that seemed like that was like, how could that possibly have passed? But it did. Harvey wasn't here.
Harvey wasn't here.
You know, I think Harvey's pinnacle might have been Congress. I could see him having become a congressman, or conceivably the mayor of San Francisco. Although I think that's a little less likely, but I think Congress would have been a good place for Harvey.
I've talked to a local political activist, one of whom said that Harvey was brilliant at getting a bunch of people with completely different points of view together in a room and getting them all to agree on a course of action. He said there's nobody who can do that in San Francisco politics now.
How different do you think the AIDS movement response to the AIDS crisis might have been with him around?
I don't know.
It's hard to answer these speculative questions. Yeah. The only answer you can give is different, but who knows how or why or what way?
Okay, very good. I want to thank you both for being here. Any last minute thoughts you might have? To got a couple minutes left before
we... call in, support Out in the Bay, support Eric here and the hard-working folks at KALW. The show is a valuable asset, a valuable voice, so call in.
Thank you so much. I'll give the phone number again with that prompt, 800-525-9917. That's 800-KALW-917. I want to thank my guests tonight, Mike Weiss, author of Double Play, The Hidden Passions Behind the Double Assassination of George Moscone and Harvey Milk, and the book's publisher, Vince Emery, who also came out with the book, The Harvey Milk Interviews, in his own words, earlier this year, that has 39 interviews, basically. And they're not all completely interview transcripts. You've got like...
newspaper and magazine interviews.
And candidate questionnaires that he filled out in the early days.
Which are just bizarre. When he was just starting out as a very unskilled amateur politician. And it also has the first time anybody's put together a detailed timeline of Harvey's life. Nobody's done that before. And also has a list of his legislative activities in the city, which is much, much larger than most people realize.
They're both great books. I recommend them highly. You can learn more about both of them at Vince Emery Productions' website, which is emerybooks.com. Also want to make some special thanks tonight to my friend and documentary producer, Brian Favorite, who came in to answer phone calls, and also Judith Kahan, who is answering phones in the Pledge Room. Thanks so much, Judith. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. If you value independent local radio and the variety of independently produced programs like Out in the Bay and City Visions and Your Legal Rights and Africa Mix, Voice Box, other music shows, Your Call, Cross Currents, please help us continue to bring them to you. It's KALW's minimally obtrusive membership campaign. I'd greatly appreciate you saying that you appreciate Out in the Bay when you pledge, or whatever shows you enjoy when you click or call with your support, so we can keep interruptions to a minimum. Again, the number is 800-525-9917. If you've listened on Stitcher or to our rebroadcast, this book will probably be available through Friday the 21st, thereabouts. So don't hesitate to call, even if you're in a rebroadcast. If you want to hear past Out of the Bay shows or this program in its entirety and sign up for free podcasts or take us with you on Stitcher, it's all free on our show's website, outinthebay.com. And drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Marilyn at Out in the Bay and Eric at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening and for your support.